First time for everything, and Back Time remembers these first time events that all happened October 15th. She had some splainin' to do for the first time today in 1951. I Love Lucy premiered on CBS. On this date in 1964, poet Allen Ginsberg coined the phrase flower power after the Hells Angels attacked anti-war demonstrators in Berkeley. Groovy, man. And today in 1989, Wayne Gretzky, while playing for the Los Angeles Kings, surpassed Gordie Howe's NHL scoring record of 1,850 career points. That's Back Time for October 15th. This is your announcer speaking.
The FDA approves napalm breast implants. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. In a surprising move, the FDA today cleared the way for the use of napalm in breast enhancement surgery. Feminist groups say implanted napalm-filled sacs could have lethal consequences should they spring a leak near an open flame. But FDA spokesman Lawrence Himes is convinced they're safe.
Well, we're not expecting any ruptures. However, women with the implants, I would suggest they avoid matches, stovetops, and centralized heating.
Many plastic surgeons applaud the decision, saying jellied gasoline implants will produce the most realistic fake breasts yet. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Easily Offended by Stuff on the Radio.
Mr. Easily Offended by Stuff on the Radio.
On the drive to work, you tuned to a wacky, zany morning show and heard them say something distasteful. You can't believe your ears. You were just shocked by a shock jock.
Isn't that what a shock jock does?
Now, you're gonna do something about it.
Get that monster fired, yeah.
So the next time you see a guy protesting your favorite morning show because it messed with his PC sensibilities, exercise your First Amendment rights and give a single finger salute to Mr. Easily Offended by Stuff on the Radio, a real American hero. You know, there is this thing called a tuner, and it actually lets you change the radio station. Isn't that incredible?
And now, from high atop the LA Talk Radio building, it's time for Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Wednesday, October 15th.
Hi.
And Susie's in the house with a nice fedora hat.
It's actually messing up, or the earphones are messing up my hat.
Yeah, you're trying to listen through the hat.
I'm having a bad hair day. I'm not taking the hat off. You can't make me.
It's only me. I mean, who have you got to impress? We don't have any in-studio guests today, so that's fine.
I don't care. I can still hear you. It's fine.
Yeah. So, we apologize for being a couple of minutes late this morning.
No, we don't. We don't apologize for anything.
We don't?
No.
Okay, but people count on this. You know, I feel like shit. But I just woke up, Susie, this morning. I allowed myself an extra half hour of sleep this morning. And
you deserve it.
I think I do, you know. I really think I do. And, I'm sorry. I don't know what they did with the
board over here.
Yeah. But I don't know. At any rate, so I get up an hour later or so, 45 minutes later than normal. And I figured, I'd have enough time. So I connect to the computer at the studio and nothing's playing. And I'm always under pressure. I mean, dead air is extreme pressure for me.
Oh, no.
So I'm trying to get this thing fixed and everything. And it's not working. And I'm imagine you're half asleep.
What causes dead air?
If this fucking computer stops working.
Oh.
Yeah. And, so imagine getting up, you're half asleep, and you have to deal with this shit. You know, you're not even fully awake yet. So,
isn't there some kind of an alarm system that you can, rig to it to make it, if it goes off, it'll, page you or something?
I know, a little buzzer,
Yeah, that would be cool.
No, but it's not that I didn't know it was happening.
Who's
this
guy?
Get up. Where?
Oh, walking over there. He's cute.
Oh, a cute guy coming?
Yeah, I think he's going to the salon downstairs.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, everyone.
Then he's probably gay. Did you see they have a really gay guy working down there at the salon?
No.
Very, very gay. I mean, this guy moves, maybe it's, Maybe it's even him. I don't know. Yeah, we get distracted by things outside the window because now we're almost at street level, you know, no longer 36th floor. Although we'd get distracted there, too, with helicopters and shit.
I feel a little bit safer here, though, in case of an earthquake, though. I will tell you that.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I just remembered. I think we do have an in-studio guest.
Really?
Yeah, but we definitely have an author we're going to call in a few minutes.
Cool.
And... yeah, he's got a cool book out. I think you'll find it interesting.
Okay.
About men.
Ooh, I like it already.
Yes, I knew you would. So that's the situation there, and that's it. You know, so we're gonna keep going. And so you keeping your sunglasses on also? Is that like the look or what?
It's not the look. I'm just, my eyes are a little bit tired today because I went head to head with my boss last night with bottles of wine.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And who won?
Actually, I think it was kind of a draw.
Oh, I figured it would be.
Yeah.
Okay. So how many bottles are we talking about here?
Oh, I think we killed maybe six or seven
between you two.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But he started with vodka, so I mean he had one leg up on me already.
I see.
Yes.
Wow.
But you know, we've decided we're doing it for the kids, and I know, I think I've told you about this before, but I think we should do some sort of cooperative marketing with this company. It's called Corks for Kids,
mm-hmm.
and basically, I don't drink for myself, Sam. That would be way too selfish. I drink for the corks.
Oh.
Solely for the corks.
Wow. And I've been so stupid all this time. I didn't see that.
You think I am that selfish? No, it's a very selfless act that I do.
I see. Okay.
You know, putting myself at risk for, I don't know, psoriasis of the liver or whatever, right. That is, cirrhosis, what is it?
Okay. So now how do you convert the corks to money?
You know what? I actually don't know the total game plan for that. But basically, you send in all of the corks that you acquire to this mm-hmm. company.
Right.
And then they end up, you know, going to wineries and different bars and just getting as many corks as they can and then recycling the corks. And then all the money goes, somehow the money that's made from it goes to children with autism.
I see. Okay.
Yes. So it's a very worthy cause.
Yeah, obviously. We should just send you a picture. Send them a picture of you drunk and then we'll show them like what the charity is all about. I don't think
goodness.
The autistic kids would like that very much.
I don't think they would care. They're in their own little world and so am I. Yeah. That's the whole point of autism.
So in your own way, you're artistic too.
Yes, yes. I was going more artistic, not autistic, but
artistic,
whatever, it works.
Okay, it works both ways.
Yep.
Yeah. So how late did you stay up drinking?
Oh, probably until about 11.
11? So That's not too bad.
No, definitely not. Okay. But when you've got to get up at the crack of dawn to be here, you know, it definitely takes a toll.
Yeah.
Hence the sunglasses and the hat.
I see, okay. And what does the wife say about all this?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
She's okay with the drink.
She actually wants to get Corks for Kids to advertise on her website as well.
Oh,
she
really?
Thinks it's a great idea.
So here you are, the nanny, and you're fucking getting drunk on her couch, probably, and getting paid for it. I mean, what's that about?
It's a wonderful job.
Obviously.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
I'm sure.
I don't know how
you managed to find them.
The husband last night was like, Susie, I think you've got the best job in the world. And yeah. I was like, absolutely.
Did you notice that you had... has like cum-like stains on it?
Yes.
Is it cum?
No.
Oh, okay. It looks dirty.
It's not dirty. It's actually been brushed and cleaned many times, but uh-huh. this is residual stuff that won't come off.
Oh.
And I know it looks like cum.
It does look like cum. Like dried cum.
I wore this hat on a bike ride last December. And it ended up being like this crazy, crazy high-paced bike ride that I was not planning on. I wasn't planning on it being that fast-paced. But so anyway, we ended up going under a bridge at one point at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was a rival group of bikers that were dressed up as Santas, you know, on top of the bridge and around the bridge. So, you know, very varying levels of Santa outfits. Some would be like fat Santas with the big bellies, and, you know, then we'd have some really skinny biker Santas. But by the time we got there, like, we were supposed to get there a lot earlier, but we took a different route. Mm-hmm. They were wasted. And so they had ended up filling these balloons with flour. And so as soon as we go under the bridge, we had a mole in our group. So our mole told them when we were coming, and they were prepared for us, and they attacked us with the flour-filled balloons.
Really?
Right when it was starting to rain.
Yeah.
So what you see that looks like cum on my hat is actually a flour and water paste.
Really?
That now won't come off.
Okay, but flour and water make flour.
No, it makes...
I mean, it makes dough.
And it's like this awful paste, and I don't know, it just kind of dried on the hat, and now it won't come off.
Yeah.
Hence the cum-like stain.
Yeah, but you don't care, you'll wear that anyway.
I'll wear it with pride. goodness.
It's funny how these days people, you know, I was thinking about it. People, you can wear anything and people don't look at you weird. I mean, remember like back in the times, well, you don't remember back in the day. Back in the day. But, you know, it used to be like, you know, if you didn't wear like exactly matching shirt and blouse and the pants or something, people would look at you funny, you know, like, but today it's like you can wear like anything.
Thank God I was not born in those good old days.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Sure. Yeah, like today, I mean, it's like people wear anything and it's fine.
Come stained hats.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel that for the most part, L.A. is not like such a, so much into the nightlife because, you know, you go to a dinner or something here and most people wear jeans and shit, you know. Nobody really dresses up in L.A.
to go out. It's just the lackadaisical look of all Los Angeles people, I find. Mm. Back when I was living in New York, you know, I had a lot of friends that were from L.A., and especially like all of my guy friends, even when they would go out to the nightclubs, they would wear jeans, sneakers, a t-shirt, and then a blazer. That's like the whole like LA look.
Yeah.
It's like you try, but they're really, really expensive jeans and really expensive shoes and a really expensive t-shirt and a really nice blazer. But put together, it's like you throw the jacket on just to look super cool, but then you put the jeans on and the sneakers to pretend that, or to make it look like you don't care, even though you really do care because you spent like $500 on the two.
Yeah.
So that's just like the typical look that actually Larry David kind of solidified that look for a lot of Los Angeles people.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you know Larry David?
Yes, I do.
Creator of Seinfeld?
Yes.
Have you ever watched his show?
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. Yes. No, I never seen it.
God damn it, Sam. I've told you a million times you need to see it. He's a neurotic Jew that's always annoyed with the world about everything because he tries to do everything right and nothing fucking goes right.
Sounds just, like Woody Allen.
It sounds like you.
Fuck you.
Well, no, you're always just like annoyed about this and annoyed about that and just, oh my God, the world's crumbling down around me. What am I going to do?
I know.
And like, you don't try and do anything wrong. You just try and go through life. But, you know, it's just one little incident after the next.
Yeah, well, there's obstacles in the way, you know. They irritate me.
Oh, my God. Everything irritates you.
I know. Listen, let's take a quick break. And
already?
Because I kind of wanted to prepare.
Okay.
So let's take just a couple minutes, and we'll be back, and we'll interview our author.
Thank you.
listening to the best morning show on internet radio. It's Sam and Susie in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back.
Yes.
Now we're a little more prepared, aren't we?
Yes. This book looks great.
Doesn't it, though?
Especially from a sexual psychology perspective.
Yeah. Give us a little introduction on that while I get the author on the line there.
His book is called The Secret Lives of Men, What Men Want You to Know About Love, Sex, and Relationships by Christopher Blazina, Dr. Christopher Blazina.
Oh.
So I would assume he's a psychiatrist.
Yeah, Secret Lives of Men. I mean, I'm wondering what that is about. I don't know that I have a secret life, but if I do, he doesn't know about it. So let's try and get him on the line, Mr. Christopher Blazina.
Oh, actually, it says he's a psychologist. Okay.
Oh, he is. Okay. So, let's get him on the line. And this is good. This sounds exciting. Sounds like a good book to me. Who the hell am I dialing here? Wait a minute. Sorry about that. What's going on?
We're just all AFU this morning.
Yes. Hello? Hello?
There we go.
Well, I was down two numbers.
Here, we're Dr. Chris Blazina. Leave your name, number, and what time you called. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Okay. All right.
Did he give you two different numbers to call?
This dialed like two numbers. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Is this your first day in the studio? I got a virgin in the house.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know what's going on. Let's try it again and see what happens.
Okay,
so, you see, we're trying to make sure that we get the guests this time, so I'm calling them instead, and it doesn't seem to be working so far. Let's see.
We'll get all the kinks hired out.
Yeah, we get his answering machine. Okay. Hello.
Wait for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? We'll try him a little. Maybe he went over with another interview or something. So
okay. We'll
go back to that. At any rate, so yeah.
We should leave him a message and tell him to call us back.
Yeah. I know. Well, yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, fuck it. This is radio, man. Anyway, so I wanted to tell you yesterday, there was a little incident in the studio here.
Uh-oh.
This woman shows up and she says she's a guest on TJ's show.
Okay.
TJ McCormick, of course, the world of TJ McCormick at noon every day. And he's a very funny guy, very, and very animated.
Very liberal.
Yeah. Not liberal. Not. So he's very animated and, you know,
yes.
He gets loud and all that. So apparently she sat here and they had it became an argument almost, you know, about politics and different things and so forth, you know, and she's an author. And so she sat here and they were talking and I noticed they were both raising their voices and stuff. And then I got a phone call, so, you know, I wasn't listening at the time. So then I get a call from TJ later, and he tells me, he says, I think I was yelling at her because she just said, "You're yelling at me, I'm leaving." And she got up and left, stormed out of the studio.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine?
Oh, what was he saying?
And he felt so bad. I asked him, I said, "What did you say?" He says, "I don't think it's something I said. I think
it was the tone of the intonation.
He says, "I yell." I said, "Well, don't you think that she should know who she's being interviewed with before she comes into the show?"
That would be like going on like Bill O'Reilly's show and expecting him to like treat you like a nun.
Yeah, I mean the least you can do is listen to the show beforehand
and find out who you're going to talk with.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I told you this, but between my first show with a co-host and with you, there was a time when I found another co-host, which was very funny, very cool and stuff. And we were on for about a week. And then I realized she was like uncomfortable with what we were talking about. And so I sent her an email. I said, you know, I feel like you're sort of like, holding back and stuff, you know, I mean, you know. So she says, I said, "I thought you were willing to talk about anything." She says, "Well, no, I'm not willing to talk about anything." So I took offense with some of the things you said. And I asked her, I said, "Did it ever occur to you to fucking listen to the archives?" She says, "No, I never listened to them."
Oh, no.
Right?
To be honest, I never listened to the archives either. Not even before I came in to interview for the job.
But you see, you don't have like family to answer to and shit.
Oh, yes, I do.
Like little kids and stuff now. But
I'm a child care technician. They might not be my kids, but
that's true.
Actually,
child care technician. Okay, here's our caller. Hold on a second.
Okay.
You're on the air with Sam and Susie. Who is this?
Hi, this is Dr. Chris Bolzina. I'm supposed to be touching base with you this morning about my book, The Secret Lives of Men.
Yes, sir. And we just tried to call you. I thought we were supposed to call you, and we got your voicemail. But that's okay. You're here now.
It's good to be here with you. I'm sorry, I had a little interview go a little bit long.
That's exactly what I thought.
That's exactly what
we
figured.
Yes. So, good morning to you. Where are you calling us from?
Let me get you to ask me that one more time.
Okay. We seem to have a bad connection. Do you want me to call you back, or do you want to call back?
Yeah, I can give you maybe a different number. You want a landline number? That might help.
A landline would be great.
Yeah, but we can't take the number over the air right now. So let's try and do this. It sounds pretty good. I was asking, where in the country are you from? Where are you calling us from?
From Nashville.
Oh, Nashville,
Music
Tennessee.
City.
Yes, sir. Is this where you've lived most of your life, or are you there now?
Well, let's see. I was born in Kentucky, and I've lived a good bit of my life down in Texas too. So I've been in Nashville, I guess, for the last 5 years. So
you don't really have much of a Southern accent.
No, he doesn't. But
it comes out. It's a lazy Southern drawl. I get tired, or maybe had one too many beers or something. I don't know, something like that. So
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, Chris, you just released a book called "The Secret Lives of Men: What Men Want You to Know About Love, Sex, and Relationships." And this sounds very, I think, very relevant. You know, I there are books out there on men, but I think there's obviously many more on women. And so I salute you for this. I remember that book, Iron John, if you remember, and that sort of started a trend towards men's books. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. That certainly moved things in terms of actually like a men's movement, men thinking about, you know, a reaction to women's movement and men thinking about how they want to be as men.
Yeah.
And this book moves in a direction that's similar to that, in that the idea behind this is that I really want men to be able to carve out a signature way of being a man for themselves. And there certainly can be cookie cutter approaches where it's like, okay, let's herd all men into one particular way of being a man, and we all know that just doesn't fit. It actually kind of leaves men out in the cold sometimes, and they feel a little disenfranchised. So the spirit of the book is really some practical ways to kind of help men move in direction.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've noticed, and I have to agree with you, is I've seen a trend in the past, 10, 20 years of the media portraying men as, kind of losers, you know. I mean, if you look at some of the sitcoms today, the men are sort of like slobby and that, and the women are like great. And then you look and you watch the commercials, and it's the same thing. And I don't think society would accept it if it was the
skills. And I think there's a particular reason for that. The book talks a lot about one of the areas. It's difficult. It's part of the male socialization. I talk about it in terms of it's part of man training.
Man training, did you say?
Man training. That's
sign
right.
me up. Sign me up.
Go ahead.
They're taught to grow up and fear the feminine. And part of the blueprint that goes with the way that we've brought boys into becoming men for, this has been at least 100 years, and it's so prevalent, you can see it in lots of sitcoms, even in The Simpsons. But the idea is that, you know, boys kind of move away from things that are associated with the feminine. And by the way, these are not necessarily things exclusive to the realm of women, but they're given that kind of stamp. But at a very young age, boys are said, you know, you're supposed to move, cut ties with anything associated with being the feminine or the feminine worlds.
Right. And I would imagine there's a problem. I mean, if the parent has had relationship problems as well, then how do they really teach the kid, you know? And I think it sort of goes from one generation to another. And but, you know, this is very interesting. What I wanted to say is it's sort of like, would you say that a lot of problems might stem from the fact that boys grow up and they realize that women, the girls are the ones that control the sex, and then what happens is that you constantly have to be after it and deal with all that rejection. How does that fit into all this?
Well, that's an interesting point, because I think it does reflect how it says that, you know, potentially that women really don't want them to be men, and whether that's trained in an authentic way, that's a different story. So really, the reason I wrote this book, though, you know, I've been studying psychology of men and masculinity in different ways, a professor and a psychologist and a researcher for a while, but you know, the reason I got into this, really, I remember growing up as a kid and watching my dad and men like him trying to conform to kind of a singular persona of being a man. And whether that fit for them or not, that was a different story. You felt compelled into that one-size-fits-all notion of how to be a man.
Right.
And I remember that planting the seed for me, being a man going through my life. So lots of different stories interwoven.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, okay, and your website, go ahead and give out the website so people can go and check it out.
Sure. It's www.thesecretlivesofmen.com.
Thesecretlivesofmen.com, and that's the title of the book, of course. And can we get that the book anywhere, like Amazon and all these places?
Yes, bookstores and Amazon and Borders and wherever you end up buying books, it should be there. So
wonderful. And how long did it take you to put it together?
It's been a while in coming. It started out as an academic book, and then I got some feedback that I should turn it into more of a book for general readership. So right. About 5 years of writing altogether.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time to invest in something you believe in. And
well, this is a heavy book, and there are no pictures.
No pictures.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
I'll tell you a story real quick.
Okay.
I know when I was writing it, I got different feedback in terms of, you know, you're writing a book about secret lives of men, and probably the best story somebody told me was, so you're writing a book about psychology of men. Is that going to be a book or something like that? So, yeah, it's been an interesting journey, but it is a labor of love in terms of trying to, you know, find the common ground between the genders. So I hope it'll be some help for
some
folks.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the book, Chris. I know it's an accomplishment to come out with a book, and especially after 5 years. So we wish you the best. Thank you so much for calling in. And again, The Secret Lives of Men, What Men Want You to Know About Love, Sex, and Relationships by Christopher Blazina, right? PhD.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Nice talking with you all. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, this is terrible, and I apologize to you, Susie, and to the listeners, because when the connection is like this, it's so hard to concentrate.
I know. And then I miss like the whole main point of like my question. I really wanted to know about the V-spot.
The V-spot.
And the castration.
I know. Is that like the vagina spot or what?
I think it has to do with vulnerability and Viagra and...
I see, okay.
Yes.
And victory in bed.
And victory.
So we apologize. That's why, you know, you do telephone interviews. You need a landline, you know, but yeah, he's probably mobile and stuff, and he needs to be in different places. So we understand, but definitely could have been better.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's funny. His voice is very, very, sounds like a lot of other therapists I've been to.
Oh, really?
Yes. He's got a doctor voice.
Yeah. Well, I guess you get that after being a doctor for so long.
It's very quiet and very even keeled and just kind of very, very soft spoken. So it makes them very like approachable, and so you kind of feel like none of your questions are stupid,
right?
In that kind of way.
Yeah.
But I just have I had visions of like sitting on many couches. As soon as I heard him come on the line, I was like, whoa, flashback.
Yeah. I know. But you know what? To put a book together, I've always wanted to write a book or something. And
this really is a heavy duty book too.
Yeah, you know, and you set out to write it. You don't know how long it's going to take you. You don't know what you're going to come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's why I like talking to authors. You know, because it is a labor of love, like you said. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
This feels like a textbook actually to me.
Yeah, that's what he said. It was going to be sort of a, but you know, I mean, it's got some really interesting chapters there. You know,
definitely.
I do think men need a little more, or women need a little more insight into men. You know, but I think like you mentioned,
I don't think men are that difficult to understand. I think they're very simple.
Well, but that's the thing is I think men don't understand themselves. And it's not that simple, you know, because just like a girl sort of like models after her mom, mm-hmm. it's the same thing with boys, you know.
I but do not boys, model after my mother.
No, you don't. Okay. I'm sure when you were growing up, you were.
Nope.
You know, I mean, who else are you going to learn from? You know, you learn from your mom how to be a woman, you know?
I've done the opposite of everything that my mother's always tried to really? Teach me. Yes. My mother was always very much into your appearance and your looks. You know, that's all you ever have. Like, you know,
really?
How you present yourself is all that matters. Look at how I present myself, for God's sake.
Oh, my God. You know, this reminds me of the Saturday night skit that that Billy Crystal used to do. And he would do Fernando Llamas. No, some, yeah, one of those. And he'd go, you look marvelous, you know.
You look, that's where
yeah.
that came from?
And he goes, yeah. And he goes, I'd rather look good than feel good. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's exactly it. And yeah. It was like, no matter what you look like, or no matter how you feel, it doesn't matter. Just like, you know, brush the tears away, put a happy smile on your face, and everything will be fine.
Wow.
So I'm just like, no, I want to look like this. And if I want to feel like this, the world's going to know about it.
Yeah. Ah!
But
yeah, the future to be big rebel.
Still, jeez.
Yeah. So anyway, we're in the middle of the discussion of the woman storming out of TJ's show. So he was like really hurt by this.
Aww.
And yeah, I mean he was like
how far into
he
the
felt
interview
so
was
guilty.
It?
An hour and 15 minutes
into
I guess.
It?
Yeah, or an hour or so, yeah, into the yeah, into
wow.
it.
Wow. What was the yeah. subject they were talking about in particular?
I don't know, politics. I don't know what it was. And but they were going back and forth, you know. And TJ is pretty pretty strong the way he comes across.
He gets
across.
Very hyper.
Yes.
And very excited.
Yes. And very loud.
Yes.
Very
yes.
loud. And he's not yelling. He just talks. That's the way he talks,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I just feel so bad for you, TJ, you know?
And, maybe he should send her an email apologizing and just say that I'm just a very outgoing person.
Yeah. But, you know, there was another person's opinion that thought, you know, we don't need to apologize for who we are. You know, I mean, this is our show. This is our radio show. You know, maybe you can, yeah, apologize for, and I did tell him to write an email, you know, maybe just apologize for her not being aware of the format or whatever and that mm-hmm. she was offended and,
yeah. So apologize for her stupidity.
But yeah, but it shows you need to prepare whatever you do in life. You know, you got to prepare. You know, you don't go to a show not knowing who the hell you're going to talk to.
It would be like going on to Howard Stern or...
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. And not knowing what you're getting into, you know? Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this is radio. And I thought it's great radio, but he doesn't want people to listen to it. So we didn't post it. But...
Wait, you thought what?
He doesn't want people to listen to the show again. So
oh, yesterday's show?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so we're
really?
Not posting it. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he feels that
now
bad
I
about
really
it.
Want to listen to it.
I know. It's like I told him, it's fucking great radio. Everybody's going to listen to this. A woman walking out of your studio. That's interesting.
My curiosity has piqued.
Yeah. TJ, call in if you're listening, man. We got to convince you to put the show on. Everybody wants to... I mean, this is like a Jerry Springer type of thing.
Can't get out of that. Jerry Springer's yeah. following me everywhere.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to tell you. I mean, there's been bigger interviewers that had people walk out on them. I mean, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It happens quite a bit.
We've never had anyone walk out on us.
No, not yet. But, you know...
I'm sure they've trashed happen. Us in the elevator on the way down, but...
Yeah. I don't know, but somehow people love us. Doesn't matter what we say.
I know.
Yeah, that's
isn't that
pretty
great?
Cool. Yeah. So what's going on? Oh, I gotta tell you. So my daughter had surgery yesterday, and it was the appendix.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it. Oh my gosh, how's she feeling?
Yeah.
Is she okay?
I suppose. Yeah. I only talked to her last night. I actually haven't spoken to her since she came out of there because it was kind of late. But I did speak to her mother. And apparently everything was okay and stuff. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, now she just has to recuperate for a week or so.
What is the point of an appendix anyway?
I don't know. I don't know what the fuck that is, you know?
And what makes it explode or whatever?
Like, I think it just gets inflamed or something like that, you know?
I think...
Does it burst, like explode?
I think it bursts and that's like what maybe causes the pain.
Really?
I vaguely remember something like that. But, yeah, I think appendixes are like one of the things that people have no idea what they're for.
Yeah.
I don't think they serve any sort of purpose whatsoever.
Yeah, but that's kind of hard to believe in the human body that you'd have something that is not really needed. I don't know. Can you think of something?
Well, I mean, maybe people have evolved over time and then like for some reason, whatever it's need That's was true. In the past. You That's know, it's true. No longer needed, and we're just going to slowly yeah. whittle it out of our systems yeah. over the next 10 billion years.
I know, I know. And I feel so bad for this girl. I mean, everything possible she gets, you know.
What kind of jeans are you handing out over there?
It's not for me. I mean, she picked up mono from someone, you know. And
who was she making out with? I got mono once, Sam.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I was a senior in high school at my boarding school, my lesbian really? Boarding school, and I was dating this girl, Rachel.
Uh-huh.
And she had mono. And so she got kicked out of our school. I told you this before, but she got kicked out of our boarding school and then went to a different one. But while she was sent home to recuperate, her house was like right down the street from my boarding school.
Right.
And so she came over to hang out with us while she was recuperating. And of course, I'm playing tonsil hockey with the girl. And she's like, I'm not contagious anymore. The doctor says I'm fine. You know, I feel great. Next thing you know, I come down with the most wicked sore throat in the
world. All in one time.
All in one letter. That was her 50th birthday present from me, along with this painting that I did, but that's besides the point.
Very nice.
But then the day she got the letter was the day that I was diagnosed with mono, and the school nurse was like, you need to come pick your daughter up. Like, she has mono. And my mom sees. You know what she said to me? When I finally got home, because she wouldn't pick me up, she refused, because I told her I was a drug addict and a lesbian. She didn't even ask, like, or make a statement about the drugs. She was just like, you're a lesbian? Who does that? Absolutely, who does that? I just don't understand.
Your mom.
My mom, thank you. Speaking of my mom, I'm actually really excited about this, so I hope she's not listening to the show. No, this is a good excitement. So I called my stepdad yesterday. So when I go to New York a week from this Friday, I'm actually going to go upstate, and I'm going to surprise my mom and my grandparents and my sisters with my visit to New York. So I'm having my stepdad put together a whole little kind of like a triple birthday dinner, because my grandmother, my sister, and my stepsister all have birthdays within the same week. So I'm having him arrange like a birthday dinner, and then I'm going to show up and surprise everyone.
Wow, that'll be nice.
I know.
Yeah. Come?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's adventurous.
I know. But so it'll be perfect, because I get into New York at like 5:30 in the morning on Friday, and then I'm going to go straight to the city from there, get him. We're going to hop on a train, go up to Po-Town, and then we'll be back in New York City by midnight in time to go out for the evening and party and just get fucked up for like 36 hours.
Wow.
And then I'll be straight on a plane back to L.A.
Yeah.
In time to come straight in to see you. So I apologize to everyone in advance for the state I will be in, not this Monday morning, but the following Monday.
So wait a minute. You're going to be coming straight from the airport to here?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that'll be interesting.
I know. I will definitely have a hat on and definitely have sunglasses
on
that day.
Yeah, you'll be totally stinky from booze and shit.
I won't be drinking in the morning. Give me some credit, please.
Yeah, but you're not going... I mean...
I'll bring my toothbrush, okay?
Oh, man.
And some baby wipes. Like, that's what you do in the military when you start like sweating and gross and you can't shower. You pat yourself down.
Really? Baby wipes?
Baby wipes.
Disgusting.
Solution to everything.
Yeah, and multi-asses too. I mean, I used to use them for a while, you know? Because it makes you feel very
You're
clean.
You're so spoiled.
What?
Exactly. It makes you feel clean. So what's the difference between like wiping off my armpit with a baby wipe or wiping off your ass? It makes you feel clean.
Okay, whatever. But I don't expect the ass to smell any different. But... After I use baby wipes.
It does. It's got that baby powder. Well, maybe. Maybe not your ass. My boyfriend has a fixation with mine. I'm serious. I don't know what that's about.
Well, women's asses are kind of attractive.
Kind of.
I mean, you know what I think about the ass in general. But men's asses, really. I mean, hairy and shit, you know.
Oh,
disgusting.
God. I agree. Disgusting. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I just had a bad visual. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but yet you've given...
This show is just going downhill
today. But
then
you've tossed salads and everything, haven't you?
A couple of times.
Yeah, you see? And then you sit here and you tell me it's disgusting
it
just
is
to
disgusting.
Look at a man's ass. Yeah. But so that was after four bottles of wine, probably.
No, actually, I try not to do it when I'm drunk, because then I'll have like nightmares and like bad visions of things. But I don't mind it in the shower. Like if I'm in the shower and like I have physically washed you, then I don't mind.
Wow.
Then it's kind of a different story from there. But so Franz, you would think Franz would want to take more showers with me, but. Yeah.
I don't know. You ain't getting close to my asshole. I can say that. Nobody does. Not even me.
Not even you?
Not even me.
Oh, my God. Yeah. How are you ever going to have a colonoscopy?
I did have one, yeah, and I had them put me out. And when I woke up, they'd been done already.
Really?
Yeah, they were done.
Oh.
Yeah.
Some people like it, actually.
Yeah. Let me tell you, though, when you go to the doctor and he makes you bend over and sticks the fingers inside of you.
Wait. Yeah. Doctors stick their fingers in your ass?
They do, yeah, to check
Why?
Your prostate.
Ow, so, ew.
Yeah, so you have to bend over. I mean, some will have you like lie on your side and sort of bring your knees to your chin
and stick
it that way. And so I don't know which one is more humiliating, that one or bending over the table. And then him just sticking it in you.
Is that called a proctologist?
No. I mean, my general physician does that.
Ooh.
But I think he's gay, so I
really?
Would understand why he does it.
Are there ever women that do this too to men?
I'm sure, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Actually, I was watching an episode of Nip Tuck.
No, I told him, I said, what kind of, you know, this is
Who
a doctor.
Who decides that they want to do this?
This is a doctor. And I asked him, I said, what would make you want to get into a profession where you look into people's assholes all day?
Well, you said he was a general physician and not...
Yeah.
Okay.
So he said, yeah, I don't look at him all day, but but nevertheless, I mean, shit, you know?
I know.
Yeah, I don't know why people get... I don't understand people that get into medicine at all.
Well, yeah. We should have my sister call in. Actually, you know, I was talking to her yesterday and she's a doctor. We'll have her call in and talk about...
Yeah, I'm interested.
Because you have to do, when you're going through med school, you've got to do like rotations in every field of medicine.
I'm sure.
My grandpa's an OBGYN.
Yeah.
So he chose to look at vaginas all day.
Yeah, well, that I can understand.
So maybe that's where I get all my pervertedness from.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, what other reason would a man have to become a gynecologist other than wanting to look at vaginas all day?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, because you get to look at ugly, stinky vaginas, too.
Oh, gosh. He's told us some crazy stories.
Yeah. I mean, it's not only the beautiful girls that you're going to look at.
We should call my grandfather and have him on the show sometime,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
That would be funny.
Yeah. Ask him vagina questions.
Oh, no. We will. But I have got to tell you this, since we were on the ass topic. Let's get back to ass, and then we'll go back to vagina.
Okay.
So there's this show, Nip Tuck, that I love, and it hasn't been on in a while, but I was watching a repeat a while back, and there was this one this one episode where there was an ass diddler.
An ass diddler?
An ass diddler.
What is that?
Basically, you know, the plastic surgeons on this show have like a recovery room where they have like two or three patients at a time recovering. And this one lady had like her whole face like reconstructed and had her jaw wired shut.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, a person that looks like a physician walks into the room and like, you know, he says, okay, ma'am, now I'm going to have to have you, you know, because I don't care. And then I also called it the ass diddler, because as soon as you get off the slide, both of us were just like, we got to go to the bathroom now. Oh, my God. But that's disgusting, thinking about that water slide, just like shooting water up people's asses like the whole day. I mean, that had the biggest line out of all the rides.
Yeah.
No wonder. Everyone loved it.
People were getting off on this shit.
I know. It was like a cleanse or a whatever you call it. I don't know. But so I nicknamed that one the ass diddler, too.
The ass diddler. Sounds good to me.
Or the rapist. I called one the rapist, too. So yeah. Because like halfway down the slide, it just spreads your legs and you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Now, don't you name your vibrators, too? Or your dildos?
No.
Like that Bob yesterday? That wasn't yours, though.
No. Who? Bob was not mine.
Yeah.
For everyone who didn't listen to yesterday's show, Thorin. Sorry. Her name's Thorin, but she ended up sleeping with my ex-boyfriend, and her name is now Horin.
I see. Okay.
Oh, payback's a bitch. But so she's in there holding my hand, and the gynecologist is like, oh, Susie. He's like, you've got your vagina. Does it hurt when you have sex? And I was like, no. I'm like, no, not really. And he's like... And I was like, why? And he's like, because your vagina is tilted. Your cervix is tilted. I was like, which way? And he's like, towards your friend. At which point she's like, really?
Wow.
But isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I've got a tilted cervix.
Really?
Yep. So apparently I'm supposed to only have really enjoyable sex with a penis that is hooked.
I see. Okay.
So I have to have hooked penises out there.
Yeah.
So do you think that's a fair...
Okay. Let's put out a call for hooked penises.
Do you think...
Please contact Susan.
Do you think that's a fair, something fair to ask someone, like on the first date, do you have a hooked penis? If so, like, you know, let's carry on with this.
Well, it depends how hooked you need it, you know. Do you just want it pointing upwards?
No, it needs to be a little...
Like curved?
Curved, a little curved to the
There's
left.
There's not that many of those.
I know.
Yeah. So you're going to have a problem. And someone who had something like this would probably be embarrassed by it.
Oh, no.
Because it's not normal.
I've had two that were like that, and they were rather impressive, and the men were very, very proud of them.
Mm. Very interesting.
The one with the cock or the penis ring in Canada and France.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting.
Franz is going to kill me for talking about his penis. Yeah, on okay.
So that's why you're with him, because he's got a hooked dick.
Yes. Okay. The truth comes out.
All right. Well, we better clean up our act, because I think we have a guest waiting.
Uh-oh.
So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
Are you a blonde who tried to enhance your hair color but was wrongfully turned into a brunette because of a mistake by a giant hair care company? You need a lawyer who will get to the roots of the problem.
Bernie Frivolous, attorney at law.
Now that I'm a brunette, I have to act smart, and men want to have actual conversations with me. I'm not having more fun.
Sounds like a frivolous lawsuit, and it's time to turn that brown into green.
Yes, when it comes to suing the big business of beauty, one lawyer's not afraid to get ugly. That lawyer is Bernie Frivolous.
There's no such thing as brunette jokes, and that's why I'm not laughing. And neither will their lawyers after I apply the color of justice.
Thanks, Bernie. But what color is justice?
See? You're feeling blonder already.
Call the Frivolous Law Firm today.
I'm Bernie Frivolous. Let's sue someone together.
You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Hello, this is George Takei, and I am truly excited to have Sam and Susie in the Morning on my internet radio. Those two are a hoot. I swear if I was heterosexual, I'd ask Susie out on a date. Of course, I'm homosexual, so I'll be asking Sam out instead. Oh my. And now let's get back to Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you, George Takei, for all the compliments. So you won't get to bed with him, but maybe I can.
Ew. You would like your asshole. Sorry, bang.
Yeah. He's been with his... they just got married. He got married with his boyfriend or partner.
Husband.
Of 20 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know. So what's going on? I was really expecting this guest, but apparently... I don't think we confirmed, you know.
Sam,
I thought it was confirmed.
I told you a million and ten times, send me the calendar, send me...
That's it. That's what I'm going to do.
And I will confirm it.
Yeah.
I will do it for you.
Okay. Well, you know what? This reminds me. I just wanted to announce that we're going to have a lot of porn stars here soon.
It's about time.
Very soon.
We haven't had enough on lately.
In fact, we're going to have one tomorrow.
Really?
Yes.
In the
already.
Studio?
You got to talk into the mic. I don't know how to make you any louder.
In the studio?
In the studio. Yeah, hopefully, yeah, because some of them will probably call, but I'm trying to get all the ones that will come in. And it helps that we are in the Valley because everybody lives here.
Yes.
So we'll see. But they do have busy schedules in the morning, those porn stars.
In the morning?
Yeah.
Who wants to?
That's when they do their movies, I suppose.
I always feel like they should be done at nighttime.
Oh.
I guess it doesn't matter. They're being done inside.
Yeah, inside, outside. Who knows? But apparently they're very busy. Busy fucking.
Busy fucking.
Wow. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yes. So I've solidified my weekend plans.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Let me just finish this.
And then go ahead.
So there's several penthouse pets in there. So
penthouse what?
Pets. You know,
pets.
The penthouse pets.
I don't know about that.
Okay. Those are like the Playboy playmates.
Like the Playboy bunnies?
Yes.
Okay.
They call them playmates.
Okay.
Not bunnies. There's no bunnies anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
They used to have Playboy clubs, and there'd be like girls dressed like bunnies there
someone.
And stuff. Oh, we do have someone. Okay. I don't know.
Is this our guest?
I suppose.
Come on in.
Yeah, I don't know. Hi.
Hello there.
Good morning. Oh, okay. No, not yet, but sit down. Okay, so I guess you ended up coming in. I thought it was the other gentleman. But no, have a seat.
No, the other gentleman is right there waiting.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, Howard.
Okay, because we were looking for him at 10 o'clock, so we didn't see him.
Sometimes the traffic on the 101 is kind of crazy.
I know. That's fine. Just send him in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you should send in too.
Yeah, give me one second.
Okay, good. So, great. Well, we have two guests.
Yay.
That sort
wonderful.
Of saved us. Yeah. So, so I just wanted, penthouse pets. And, those are like, ones that
she's
are featured.
She's kind of cute. She could be a penthouse pet.
Don't tell her that.
She's got the little accent going
yeah,
on.
I know. Well, she called to arrange it, so I talked to her on the phone. But we'll find out where she's from and everything. So.
Excellent.
So penthouse pets, and there's four or five of them. So I figured we'll do a whole week of penthouse pets. So that's going to be that. You know what? Give us just a very quick break. We'll just get our guests situated here, and we'll be back right after this.
There's something about the way you try to look. It's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you, an angel, or just looking that good? When you take your time, you are so divine. I'm not surprised, I'd like to watch you in this light. Tonight.
shitty talk radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Susie in the morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back, Susie.
Yes, we are.
And we've got our guests in the studio.
Full house.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, and please introduce yourself.
Good morning, I'm Alan Howarth.
Uh-huh. And you brought a beautiful, two beautiful women with you, actually.
A very lucky day.
Very lucky. I've only got one. You got two. Okay, and good morning to you.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, and introduce yourself to us.
Yeah, my name is Marcela Iglesias, originally from Argentina. That was my accent. It's kind of, you know, notice that.
I love Argentinian accent.
Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah.
Very nice. Get a little closer to the mic.
We want to hear that accent.
Yeah, we do.
Alrighty.
Yeah. Susie, get us, maybe you see the microphone, just push it up there a little bit. There you go.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to fix stuff here.
Yes, we want to be able to hear you.
Absolutely.
Right. So now, how are you guys related? Do you work together? What do you do exactly?
Actually, we were just introduced by Miss Sherry Thomas, who's in the studio with us.
Yes. Hi, Sherry. Okay. Well, we're not going to hear you, so we'll get to you in a moment. I apologize. I didn't realize there was going to be three people. But not that it would have made any difference, because we only have two microphones. So
so recently, Sherry introduced me to Marcela, and Marcela came to my studio in La Cañada, which is over by Pasadena.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a demonstration studio plus a working film studio there where I do music for film and television.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a composer and a sound designer. I've worked in the film industry since 1980.
Mm-hmm.
I did Star Trek and Halloween and Raiders of the Lost Ark and
Bram
Stoker's Dracula. And I've got Academy Awards for sound design credentials as a professional.
Right.
But what I brought her over to experience was a thing we refer to as raw music, R-A music.
Right.
And raw music...
That sounds like an Egyptian god or something, right?
Exactly. Well, it's named after the Egyptian sun god Ra, who in Egyptian mythology presented mathematics to man.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Actually, I was part of the story is I actually went to Egypt to research this.
Really?
And there's some interesting information that we gathered there.
Mm-hmm.
But let me start at the beginning. The Ra music story actually started when I was given a book called The Rods of Amun-Ra, written by a man named Wesley H. Bateman. Wesley is a brilliant mathematician, and he had studied the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt for its architectural measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And he was convinced that the original builders, the original architects, built very deliberately that structure and had mathematics embedded in all the measurements.
Right.
And his theory was that whoever built that thing wouldn't have made a particular dimension, a length, let's say 26.8492 inches. It would have probably been 27 inches.
Right.
So he began to read all the books of everybody who ever measured the Great Pyramid, and from that decided that there is an actual unit of measure that's a pyramid inch. It's slightly different than our standard inches. A pyramid foot, a pyramid meter.
Right.
And when he started using those measurements against the standard measurements, he found that there's a system of mathematics which he calls Ra mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ra mathematics reveals what we call sacred geometry. I don't know if you know what that is, but throughout nature, nature actually has mathematics.
Right.
The symmetry.
Yeah.
Symmetry.
We were just talking
ratios.
About that, remember, yesterday? Yeah.
And,
everything is mathematics and numbers in the universe.
As we'll call nature, because we can go farther to gods and things like that, but let's just...
We'll tap off at nature
just because it makes too much big of a discussion.
But you're talking about Ra, who is a god, so I'm not quite sure.
Exactly. Okay. The point being that in Wes's discovery of the raw mathematics, he found that there were two ratios.
Mm-hmm.
You know what ratios are? They're fractions.
Yes, right.
Two ratios that were consistent throughout all the measurements.
Mm-hmm.
One was the ratio phi, P-H-I,
which
is also called the golden mean.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of those numbers that, if you express it decimally, never ends. It goes on for infinity. Mm-hmm. It's 1.618 and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll go
in
a computer. The computer will never resolve.
Right.
The other ratio is pi.
Right.
And pi is the ratio of a diameter of a circle to its circumference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you take a circle that's one unit in diameter, if you roll it, Mm-hmm. By the time you come around rolling the edge to come back, it'll come back to 3.14159.
Right.
Da, 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 da,
right.
Da, da,
okay,
da,
so we know that one, yeah, with right. circles and everything. Right. Okay, so get to the music. So how does the music fit into
all this? I read this book, and it was an 800-page book that he published about all this mathematics. Mm-hmm. And at the end, he said there would be frequencies described by the pyramid mathematics. And being a musician, my antenna went up. I got to know about this.
Yeah.
And I actually found his telephone number, and I called him up. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, Wes, I just read your book. It's fascinating. All this stuff is great. Tell me more about the frequencies. Well, he was so excited that someone, one, read his book, and second, was interested, yeah. that he began to download to me all this information about the mathematics. It was like going to a college course on the phone. Mm-hmm. Well, eventually we became friends and then associates, and finally I was invited out to his residence out in North Las Vegas, and we had the great moment of the discovery of the sound, mm-hmm. of raw music. So we had an oscillator, which is an electronic device that you can mathematically dial a frequency on. Mm-hmm. And he dialed up one of the frequencies. He said, this is a raw note A.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sitting there on an electronic keyboard.
And he made this up, right? I mean, did he make it up? Raw is A and all that stuff?
Yeah, this is all from the calculations of the mathematics.
I see.
So there was conversions from the wavelengths. Remember, every sound has a wavelength.
Okay.
So converting the wavelengths into frequencies is, mm-hmm. what he did on his mathematical side. But there was never turned to sound yet.
Mm.
So this was the great moment when we first heard it.
I see.
And so I'm sitting at a piano, and it's an electronic piano, so you can detune the pianos. Mm. And he plays me the note, and it's going, ooh, on the oscillator. And I play the note on the piano, that's the note A, and it goes, ooh, it's up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to detune the piano, and I go, do-do-do-do-do-do, and I bend it down a little bit. And the precise detuning of the piano, and this is for all our musician friends, of -64 cents, which is a little more than 5/8 flat.
Mm-hmm.
So I flatten the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And now I play the piano, and I play a little piece on the piano, and I go, golly, this sounds like a 17th century piano. Now,
really?
I really don't know what a 17th century piano sounds like, but that was my impression.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what do you mean I'm right? And he says, this was the tuning in the 17th century. And I go, no.
Wow.
So I did a little more research, and I found that in the year 1711, the first tuning fork was invented by a man named John Shure, mm-hmm. and that still exists today.
Mm-hmm.
And the frequency is this note.
Wow.
So in history, mm-hmm. 300 years ago, Bach, Mozart, Handel, all these guys tuned their instruments to these frequencies.
I see. And that's different from what we do today.
Right, exactly. In 1925, in order to create a standard, the American music industry standardized the frequency of the note A, mm-hmm. so that all pianos and all instruments would be in tone with each other and all records would be in tune. And we standardized to what's called 440 cycles. So this is A equals 440.
Mm-hmm.
But in the raw system, A equals 424.
Okay.
And also,
so you're making my head spin with all the numbers. So let's try to make it sort of more digestible. So,
all right,
I want to get more to the music.
No, please ask,
because we're
going
to lose this.
Yeah, the audience needs to understand this is something different. Yeah. And something really.
You
got to
understand, everybody's got a different size brain, and ours are not very developed.
That's fine. I'll stay more general.
Okay. So let's talk about the music. I mean, you brought us a CD here.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Whoa.
And on the CD, we have examples of music. That first is the original recording from the CD.
Okay.
And then the same piece of music is now played again, only this time it's been detuned to the raw frequencies.
Yeah. So and it sounds different?
Absolutely.
It's
really?
Amazing how different it sounds. It shouldn't make this much difference.
Yeah.
But what's happening, it turns out, back to this natural mathematical system, mm-hmm. we are built, as living human beings, we are built around these ratios of pi and phi.
Right.
If you look at your own hand, and on the first knuckle of your first index finger, you call that one unit.
Mm-hmm.
The next part down from your fingernail is 1.618 times longer,
right,
than
which
that.
Which is phi, right?
Which is phi.
Yeah, so that's the golden mean.
The golden mean is throughout the physical designs of all living things. Nature's constant.
Yeah, this is like amazing. I mean, I read a couple books on it, and actually the Da Vinci Code was what brought it out in the open.
They call that Fibonacci numbers.
Right.
So Fibonacci had the if you take phi times the next number, or phi times the next number, it makes a numerical sequence.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if you put it on a graph, you know what a snail shell looks like. You got that spiral that keeps getting bigger and bigger. That's a Fibonacci curve.
Right.
So nature uses phi in all physical things. Now we started looking at meditation and brain waves, and we found that the brain waves are pi based.
Oh, okay.
So all the electrical circuits that are in living things, subtle or got, when you move your muscles, you do this. Your brain is working on pi-based frequencies. And we also discovered that the Earth has pi-based frequencies.
Mm.
And then when a person meditates, a person who really knows how to meditate, when they finally go to that quiet place and they're there, they actually have their brain waves synchronized to the Earth. And this is where they find this great knowledge, this
Whoa,
inner knowledge.
No,
weird.
Really? Wow.
That's and crazy.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
Nobody knows it. Everybody's not hearing.
Okay.
Right.
I mean,
about that wave.
So this is life. This is life on this planet.
Right.
So the idea of tuning music to be in total harmony
with the universe,
the life force, and our minds and the universe gives the music a different communication. All of a sudden, it's like gears that normally, you know, a transmission, the gears have to mash up perfectly.
Right.
Well, the standard tune of music doesn't quite mesh in.
Yeah.
But when you retune it to the raw frequencies, it just folds right in, and everything goes easy, and the communication...
I've got to hear this.
Yeah, so let's play
right,
some of this. You brought us
more.
Some of the music. So what is track one? What are we going to hear there?
This is a piece of opera. From a Deutsche Grammophon record. I apologize not knowing the name of the opera, but it's about 1 minute. It's very simple. It has a voice, a woman singing, and we can hear her voice. And this will be first her singing the opera in standard frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So let's hear that.
Okay.
And
it's about a minute long.
Okay. So
let it play instead.
Let's see what that is. Okay, so we get the idea. Now, the second one is the same song?
Exactly the same song, only now retuned into the raw frequency.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Let's check this out. Okay. Well, I can't really tell the difference.
It sounds more minor to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ladies are more sensitive than us guys.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. And I'm a musician too, you know.
But it's subtle. It's subtle. If you don't have a reference for your frequencies, you don't know.
Just listen
a little bit more. Just give it a minute.
Okay.
Let's play for a second.
So this is like the same song we heard.
Yeah, same song we heard.
So is that like a different key or something? Or
It's not a different key. If we know on a piano, you know what black and white notes are.
Right.
It's about 5/8 down from the first white note to the next black note. It's not all the way to the next note. It's in the crack.
I see. Okay. All right. So these are notes that we don't normally use.
Right. That's the whole point.
Is there such a thing? I mean, I thought that we had pretty much the whole gamut of sounds.
All right,
they're funny. Well, there is such a thing. We're hearing it.
Okay.
Of course it is.
Yeah, of course there's such a thing.
I'm thinking do, re, mi, and then you have the ones in between, and
right,
that's
right,
it. You know?
Right,
so you're saying that they're not like discrete, but sort of a continuous.
Right. I'm about to. There's things called tempered tuning and stuff like that, which gets into averaging the frequencies of notes to be able to play in many keys.
Right.
We're not going to mess with that today. We're just going to talk about the average reference frequency of the whole, in this case, keyboard, shifted down to this minus 64 cents.
Right.
And then you just play again.
I see.
So we're not, you know, so you could retune your guitar, you could retune your keyboard, you could sing to it.
I always had this piano teacher when I was younger named Sylvia Furesh. And she was always just like, Susie, she's like, you know, if you push just one note, she's like, there are so many different things that you could push on here. Like, it's not just one note. I mean, it's got like a million different levels just for that one key.
Right. Well, that's a dynamics.
Yeah.
That's how loud it can be. And that's, and the timbre or the tone quality changes based on how loud you play.
Yeah.
So let's try another one.
Okay.
Let's try another one.
Okay. Sherry, I see you took a place in front of the microphone. What do you want to add?
Well, I like to kind of interject some thoughts that kind of I think most people can understand. We're transmitters. We're energy fields. Each one of us is a transmitter. So we receive signals, and we receive signals a little bit differently, but basically we're energy fields.
Mm-hmm.
And when this being tuned to what is more perfect and what is more natural,
right,
which is our speaking voice, the sounds of whales, the sounds of birds,
mm-hmm,
we're now tuning into an instrument that is more in our realm and our reality.
Right.
Instead of being a vocalist and straining to possibly meet up,
mm-hmm,
with where that tuning and that composition is coming in.
Right.
I'm putting a little bit of strain, mm-hmm, instead of opening up and kind of going into that zone as like a Mariah Carey or somebody,
mm,
who might just naturally be free,
right,
because they're kind of, so to speak, riding the back of a horse or something, you know, the, mm-hmm, the music, and you know, putting themselves into it.
Yeah.
And with this being more of a match of frequencies and hitting your chakras and having this effect,
mm,
it literally resonates in your body. And the response I've gotten from a lot of people is that it's almost like a 3D sound.
Really?
You're feeling it everywhere. You're feeling it in you. You're like in the womb of a song.
Yeah.
Wow.
And when you really get the right headset, the right sound system, not that yours isn't great, but when you really hear it, like, for example, Alan has a sound immersion, a 48-channel studio that's remarkable,
really?
Again, cutting edge.
Yeah.
When you hear the raw through that, it's remarkable. You feel engulfed.
Really?
You're in another place. Mm. And, you know, this is something that science has used, like in, you know, The Secret and What the Bleep Do We Know. They understand if you can believe it, if you can feel it, if you can experience it, you're there.
Mm.
And you can manifest it into being. So music has a way of taking you there, but when you're more in the perfect frequency of music,
right,
you can really be there.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, that's really interesting. So do you compose songs?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, do you play solely in this raw?
No, obviously to communicate with other musicians, I play in standard tunings.
Mm-hmm.
But for my own compositions, I play in the raw. Let me go a little bit farther with the experience of raw frequencies. Obviously, once I discovered how to retune my piano, I thought I'd make some meditation CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working on this CD we call Paradise Within with the other lady, Siobhan Sullivan. And originally, I was composing it in standard frequencies. And at the end, I thought I would just digitally retune the tracks.
Right.
And it came up to this one evening where she canceled, and I was just kind of sitting there in the studio going, you know, I'm going to try retuning the instruments and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I retuned the instruments, and in 3 hours, I wrote 3 songs with no edits. Everything was perfect. Mm. It's just the creative flow,
right,
having retuned to this stuff, was unbelievable. Musicians call it hitting the zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get into the pocket and just nothing goes wrong. And this happened. I finished the rest of the CD in 3 hours. It was taking me weeks.
Really?
And
that's amazing.
So let's hear something that you composed that's a little more like, because the opera, you know, I'm not into opera, so
right,
I couldn't really tell the difference. But let's say just an original song that
all
you
right,
wrote.
Well, I'll tell you, just because we've got this CD loaded up, there's
right,
two short examples. One is a piece of classical violin music, and then there's a piece from Enya, which we could all identify.
Right.
So
okay,
you could, mm-hmm, so if you just bear with us on this, it won't take very long.
No, I mean, you know, yeah. I just we have a limited time.
Yeah, I'll get an original piece out for you.
Oh, no, that's fine. So I thought it's on this CD.
No.
Okay, so which track should we play now?
Just keep going.
Do the violin.
They're short. Do the violin.
Okay, do the violin.
And, yeah, just it's only 30 seconds, so let it play all the way.
Okay. Okay, so what are we listening to here? This is a violin, okay? And somebody that might hear this, would they notice anything different about it?
Not if you didn't tell them.
Not if you didn't tell them.
If you didn't tell them.
Yeah. Now, that's why I can't perceive how it's different, you know?
Right.
But you're saying it's more like not understanding how it works, but just sort of like
immersing yourself in it.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
All right, play the cut number... We'll play the Enya, because everybody can relate to the Enya.
Okay. We'll play the Enya. So tell us a little bit about this. Now, is this something that you composed yourself?
Yeah, this is the one I was talking about where I had this creative experience of going through the music and just having it flow.
Right.
And so at the... let me see which one I want to do here. If we do cut number... number 9 or 10. Both of those are the compositions that just kind of came out.
And you said it took you hardly any time to put those together,
three hours, just whip it out.
Yeah. It was like an hour a song.
Yeah, wow, they're very nice. And now, how long have you been in music and sound?
Oh, ever since I was a little kid.
Really?
I played in bands, rock and roll, and all that sort of stuff. We were produced by a producer named Bill Simzik, who went on to do the Eagles. Joe Walsh and James Gang was our sister group. We opened for The Who and The Cream and Steppenwolf and all that
stuff
in the 60s and 70s.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And then I've been around, and I worked with a jazz band called Weather Report for a number of years as the keyboard technician for this fabulous keyboard player named Joseph Zawinul. He just passed away, but he's one of the iconic fusion jazz guys. So I've been around music the whole time. So I am sensitive.
Very nice. So this is like the next logical step for you.
Yes, exactly.
And explore something new.
And then we ask about, what are you going to do with this? Well, two things. One, we created a website called rawmusic.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there you can upload any music of yours, and the pitch conversion is in the website.
Oh, wow.
So now you can try whatever song. You want to do Sting or the Beatles or classical or something you wrote.
Right.
And you want to see what it sounds like in the raw frequencies. We actually have a little e-commerce in there. And for 99 cents, you can upload the file and it comes back down, converted into the raw frequencies.
Cool.
My mom's going to love this. She's a music teacher and a classically trained pianist and singer. So.
Wow, this is cool. Okay. So which track did you say we should play out of this one?
Go ahead for track, do track 10.
Track 10, okay.
Yeah.
All right, track 10 for you.
Yeah, and we'll play just a little bit of it.
Okay. This is what Alan composed.
Yeah, this is meditation music, so it's slower, but let's listen.
Well, if I fall asleep, just change the tune.
It's not sleepy.
No, I mean, you said relax, I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah.
Feeling relaxed already. Yeah, Susie's closing her eyes.
I was meditating with
Sorry.
It.
She's going to her special place.
Yeah. Yeah, this is cool. I don't know, it's kind of a little spooky music, you know? I mean,
He's looking at me with total disdain.
It has a little Egyptian overtone for me, which is where I came.
Well, he did a lot of John Carpenter movies.
So really? Yeah.
Now, to do with it.
You're not associated with the Raelians or anything, right?
No.
The ones that are into Ra and all that stuff. Have you heard of them?
I was wondering about that too.
Yeah.
No, I'm not actually. No. I'm just an independent researcher. My partner is Wes Bateman now, and he's the mathematician that really understood this stuff. Two little anecdotes on confirmation that this is not just made up.
Yeah.
I told this discovery to an archaeological guy named Dr. J.J. Hertog. He's like an Indiana Jones character.
Right.
And he agreed with me right away. He says, Alan, I've been trying to prove this for years, and you're somebody that understands. So he sponsored an expedition to the Mayan temples.
Ooh.
Where we actually measured the acoustical properties of all the Mayan temples, over 200 samples. You know what samples are.
Right.
We play pink noise, and we do sweep tones, and we figure the resonance. We created a database of all the frequencies that are the natural frequencies in the temples. And they were all on the Ra frequencies.
Really?
Wow. Then we actually went to Egypt and we rented the Great Pyramid for 2 hours.
You could rent the Great Pyramid?
Yes. I was so thrilled. It was $8,000 to rent the pyramid. I thought, such a deal. You get the pyramid. Oh,
I want to get married there.
You could.
$8,000. Yeah. 2 hours.
With Ra music.
So basically we got it very quiet and I measured the King's Chamber. And the resonant A frequency is exactly the one that my partner Wes Bateman said it would be, based on he knew the wavelengths that would be in the room. Now think about what was this thing designed for? It was the pinnacle of the Egyptian mystery school. You would study for a long time, and eventually you would go into the King's Chamber, and they would leave you there overnight. And the idea is that you go in there, and if you start to sing and you get in tune with the room, and you do your thing. Once you're on the right note, you're on the right frequency, and you have this transcendent experience, which was the purpose was to confirmation of the afterlife, of higher dimensions.
Whoa.
And this is something that's, 5,000 plus years old,
right,
that these guys understood that we've rediscovered mathematically, because it was already there.
Yeah.
And now at confirmation in the pyramids in Egypt, in the temples in the Yucatan, and now in the 17th century with the Renaissance composers. So we just we're out today. We just need to restore this right. this frequency reference. Yeah. Like a radio station could put it into the broadcast chain, and all the music could come out in raw frequencies.
Right.
I mean, so, essentially, it's all accomplished.
Yeah, you see, that's what I could probably relate to more if we played like a song we know or something, and then play right. through that frequency.
All right. So the Enya was the one everybody would know.
Enya, okay. And which one is that?
That's there's six on there. So it'll be number 5 and 6 we play.
Okay, 5 and 6. If I can get this to come again. Okay, hold on just a second. I don't know what's going on here, but we'll try.
That's all right. Do your technical stuff. Oh. So,
well, of course it won't play because it just ejected out of there. I don't know. How. but what? So you're saying that this is? I mean, the bottom line of this, why we would want to listen to this, is because it kind of puts you in a spiritual state of mind or something.
Well, as an artist, because right. you're a musician, okay,
right.
you have a communication in your song, whatever it is. Yeah. Relax. Get up and dance. I love somebody. Well, the frequencies that are included in standard tuning are better communicated in the raw frequencies.
Mm.
So whatever your message is, your audience receives it better. It goes from listening it to the ears mm-hmm. to a whole body experience.
I see. Okay. So it is about energies, like you were yeah. describing, Sherry, right?
It actually invigorates you. And if you consider maybe nightclubs, and you've got music out there, and you've got people just really charged up and, you know, feeling the music and moving with the music, and it really feels like it invigorates you. It wakens you.
Wow.
That whole feeling of awakenment, being present.
Mm. Yeah.
Being in the center of it, and actually, instead of being out here and being a wall,
right.
you're sitting in the middle of it, and you're engulfed in it, and you're present in it, and you're present in the moment.
Mm.
So I think, if anything, it's somewhat of a tool to right. kind of, like he had mentioned, getting into meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But more important, you can take, it's impartial,
right.
so you can take any song, whether it's hip-hop or rap, you know, blues, jazz, mm-hmm. country,
right.
and it's unbiased. So it helps you to tune your body with music
right.
that you resonate with, and it's resonating you, and it's actually healing you.
Right.
It's actually helping align you and recharge and awaken those energy chakra points.
I see. Okay. So are you partners with Alan? I mean, what do you guys do exactly?
Good question.
Yeah.
Well, Sherry and I have known each other for over a decade.
We've worked on a few projects.
And Sherry's worked for years. Major record labels.
Booking agency, management, band management. I've worked for the largest record company, publishing company, Universal mm-hmm. Music Group, and film, TV, music, you name it. And I've never come across anything like this. I knew he was developing this. I knew this was kind of sacred. I knew this was going to be very changing in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a business partner. We're involved in cutting-edge electronics, technical, you know, everything from real-time virtual security, you know, on the edge to audiovisual. So that's where we kind of partnered up on this.
I see.
So we're looking at manufacturing a processor, a raw processor, that will actually be available to the end user, so in different capacities and different forms. We're also reaching out to several of our kind of big name yeah. attachments.
You mean like a computer processor? Is that what you're talking
it's
about?
It's actually, you know, it's really funny when people say PC, this is why I thought, okay, I'm looking at your laptop.
No, you desktop. Said processor.
No,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's actually a hardware unit that they call a PC.
I see.
Kind of Yamaha receivers. They're kind of basically okay. software.
Right. You know?
So they're okay. it's a software application, hard unit, like a receiver.
Oh, neat.
So it'll take like a song and convert it? Is that what, uh-huh.
exactly.
what it does?
I exactly. Okay. And right now on the website, you can do it in non-real time, so you can upload a file and it gets changed and it comes back down.
Right.
But we feel that a consumer would want something that they would just play streaming through and it would on the fly change
yeah.
everything.
Yeah.
And as you know, as a musician, there are things like pitch changers, stuff like that. So the technology exists.
Right.
But it's the intellectual property that's behind right. what we want right. to do that's really the gold. That's really the gem that we're working with.
Right. Okay, so let's hear that Enya track because we're running out of time.
Right.
Which track was it again? 10?
5 and 6?
Yeah, well, it's called 10. Yeah, it's 9 and 10.
Okay, 9 and 10.
Right. So 9 is Enya first.
Okay, so we're going to listen to a song from Enya. And
no,
then we'll
no,
see.
You're still on my Paradise Within.
Oh.
On the other one.
Okay.
Sorry.
So much for that.
That's right. It's the white one there sitting next to you.
This one, the edits.
Yeah, the
okay.
edit one.
Okay. I thought that's the one we played before, but okay. Anyway, so you know what? Let's leave that for the end until I load it. But and then Marcella, I wish we could talk to you also. You're not on
yeah.
the mic, but yeah, okay, they're gonna switch.
Again.
Yeah, we've got so much noise in the studio today. If I were a listener, I'd shut it off completely.
I'm not on the mic, but people can feel me. That's the key. That's
yeah,
the key.
To feel you?
No, yeah.
Oh.
Feel your energy.
Feeling everything's the key.
Feel the energy,
yeah,
yes.
With my, just looking at you, you can feel what I feel. Right.
Absolutely.
I'm a transmitter.
Yes, you're a firecracker. That's what you are.
I've heard that before.
So, yes. I mean, you are. You're pretty much bouncing off the walls here. And that's
it.
Good. We love energy. You know, we got a lot of energy. So, you're from Argentina, right?
Yes, I am. And I was born there, yeah.
Really? And when did you come out here?
On 1999.
So, about 9 years.
Yeah.
9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know English before you came here?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, I did.
Well, you speak very well. That's
Thank
good.
You. Thank yeah. you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Love Argentinians. You know, I mean, they're the nicest people. Have you ever met any, Susan?
Yes, I used to, a couple of people, actually, we had a lot of people in Colorado where I used to live that would come and work at the ski resorts from Argentina.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so. Absolutely. Like in the season, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have a friend working, she works in Aspen, Colorado.
Yep.
Yeah. It's great there.
Great accent, too.
Thank you.
So how did you meet with Alan and Sherry, and how are you involved in all this?
Well, I met Sherry because I work in a restaurant called Buenos Aires Grill. Mm-hmm. Actually, to now we have all-you-can-eat pizza.
Really? Where's,
yeah.
Where's it at?
It's
I'm coming.
Corbin and Nordoff on Northridge. It's
okay.
Argentinian food. Awesome. I've been working there for 40 years.
Right.
Paul Rodriguez is the owner. He's great. And Jerry used to go to this restaurant like every day to have a
Is
salad.
That new one there? Like near the Burger King and stuff like that? Is
okay,
that where it is?
I've said, I've been working in this restaurant for 40 years, so obviously it's not new.
Oh.
Right?
Oh,
no,
okay.
Yeah.
Gee, this chick is really going to try to make me embarrassed
she's
here.
She's going to put you right in your place.
Yeah, I'm telling you, she's fast. Yeah. She's really fast.
Okay,
go ahead.
Back to the point.
So it's
I
not
know
point.
I know Sherry because she was there with Robert, that's also her partner, for Alliance Technologies.
Yeah.
So we met there, blah, blah. She told me about this project. And we have like kind of connection with Sherry that it's not only like monetarily or it's something different. When she mentioned this, I went to Alan's house and hear about all this. And
right.
I was touched. I really...
Really?
I'm a very sensitive person. And
really? Are you spiritual?
I am.
Pretty spiritual?
Yeah, I am a very sensitive person.
Right.
And nothing like amazed me more than to... If I feel the project, if I feel something that it's positive within... Regardless of any project,
right.
I like to support it and to go on with that.
Yeah.
I really like this. This is totally different. And I know you said it's very hard for you to understand the
to
difference
tell,
or to
yeah.
hear.
Yeah.
But if you feel it like in a house, it's very difficult to hear here in the radio with the speed, you know,
okay.
with headphones.
All right.
It's all different. You really feel
really
different. Yes.
So it's about more like feeling the music as well as
it's,
hearing it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if people go to the www.rammusic.com and maybe do that conversion and maybe they have a surround system or their house, maybe they can be available to feel what I felt because I have experience.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm being really honest with this. I'm not lying at all.
Well, I wouldn't think you would be. I mean, if you got into this.
I got into this. It's totally different. And even my son, he's 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kids are more sensitive to stuff. And
I
play one of Alan's CDs he gave me with Sherry. And he opened his eyes like big. Like, you know, he understood. And they're more open because... to senses than adults.
Right. So Alan, so you're saying it's really if you meditate and listen to this, you're really going to connect with it.
You know, I think that if you use music as the background of your lifestyle, whatever that music is converted into these frequencies will enhance the experience that you're going. Because if you like a certain kind of music, that's good. But the music will work better for you.
Mm.
You'll get more out of the listening to any music.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we were saying before... The what do you do with this now? This is kind of what you're asking. Yeah. There's a field now of sound wellness and sound healing where we're using music for therapy with children, with adults, one to relax them, second to energize them, to work with depression. There's I have one fellow in Utah that's working with war vets for post-traumatic syndrome, and he finds that the converting the music into the raw helps them gets back to their original selves. So there's a moving forward on this, and we're at the beginnings. I mean, although it's a rediscovery, it's amongst friends at this point, and the website is the first thing to really go public. But I've gone to conventions now. There's another one in Santa Fe in mid-November. That's the International Sound Healing Conference. And when I go there and play this, I mean, most people in the sound healing world have their Tibetan bowls and their didgeridoos and their tuning forks, which is great. And some are artists and they make CDs. But this is the first solution that is sort of a global change of all music that can restore the power of music into the natural frequencies. And that's kind of the...
Well, that's fascinating. I can't wait to get on that website and put in a song I know and then kind of, you know, convert it through that thing and see what it really does, you know? Because then you can compare, you know?
Because we're here on the radio and it's sound bites and you know,
yeah,
the focus
exactly.
Is different.
Exactly. And like I said, I'm not good with opera, so I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. So
I love opera.
But do you?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, you see?
I've been looking for someone to take me to the opera recently.
Okay, well, whatever. But what are the plans? Where are you going to take this?
Well, I'm working with Sherry, and we're going to actually now make some hardware. Part of what their company does is do home theaters. So the idea is to make a sound immersion theater using my immersive 48-channel sound system, which is actually a room that has 48 speakers and 48 amplifiers, and the sound is converted into a full immersion, much like when you sit in headphones,
That's
but
nuts.
It's your whole body.
It's unbelievable. It's really? Awesome.
Yeah, I developed this for
something
theme parks.
That I never heard before.
Yeah. Sounds like an amusement park ride.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's actually better. Yeah. Actually better because I've been to parks all the time. The music, it's loud, and you feel it here.
But you feel
it
reverberating
room,
in your soul.
You feel it everywhere in your body.
Yeah.
And then it's in an even sound level. It's not something that's oppressive as far as the volume. It's more the immersion, just like reality.
Right.
And so combining that with the frequencies of the raw now make these rooms, theaters, whatever you want to call it, where people can now go and find their inner moments, where, you know, sort of the getaway.
Yeah.
Then the other thing is obviously the website.
Right. Go ahead and give out the website again.
Yeah, it's www.ramusic, rawmusic.com.
Right. And you'll be able to listen to such music that you're talking about.
The examples that we have today are available there, plus any music of your own, like something you're familiar with.
Yeah, definitely.
That's exciting.
Well, congratulations. I mean, this is definitely fascinating. Some of it went right over my head, but I get what you're saying, you know? I mean, I love math, and I have books on like numbers in the universe and stuff, but I think we need to sort of like digest this and really, think, listen, because that's what music is. You can't describe it. You have to listen to it and experience it, you know? Mm-hmm. So at any rate... our time is just about up, so Mr. Alan Howarth, right?
Yes,
and
thank you.
Marcella, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you, thank
in.
You for
and
taking
Sherry,
today,
yes,
yeah.
And Sherry, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. And good luck to you guys. I mean, I'm sure this is gonna really take off because it's different, and I think people connect to this stuff. There's like so much spirituality going on today that I think this would hit.
I agree with you that the timing is propitious, that as we're turning away from our material possessions and our economics are shifting under us, we're all going to look for something inside that we can own,
right?
That no one else can own.
Yeah.
And this really enhances that.
Yeah. Well, you'll probably be like a big star one day, and
I'll
be proud to have associated with you. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, Susie, thank you so much.
I'll see you tomorrow.
We're practically out of time, and tomorrow we got some interesting guests as well. Again, thank you so much for coming, all of you, and we'll see you tomorrow.